And the first speaker I would like to give the floor is Maria Aleksinska. Maria currently works as an economist at the OECD Development Center, holds a PhD in economics from Bocconi University, and has worked, among other places, at the International Labour Organization and at the Paris 1 Panthéon Sorbonne University. And she's a specialist in labor economics and development economics, who will give us more insight into why do these kinds of regulations actually exist.
Thank you very much, Matthias, for your introduction. Greetings to all the participants. And let me start by saying that it really gives me a great pleasure to be here today. I thank you for the invitation, and really a particular pleasure actually to see not only familiar faces, but also really good friends. That was unexpected, and so it really makes it really a pleasure to be here with you. So I look forward to this presentation. Let me start sharing my screen with you, and let me know whether you can see it. Yes, okay, great. So let me also start by a disclaimer. The presentation that I prepared together with Angelika Müller is based on our joint paper that we published as an ILO working paper, and is a product of our joint work at the ILO. So currently I work at the OECD. So I really want this to be up and clear that the results presented here do not reflect in any way my work at the OECD, and that neither they reflect necessarily the OECD views or views of the OECD colleagues who do work on this topic. I currently work on other topics, so I'm not necessarily legitimate even to speak on the OECD behalf about this. So I'm really speaking, presenting the previous work that was done at the ILO and currently as an individual person. So what I will speak about in this presentation is really the economic and social rationale of collective dismissal procedures, why this area is regulated, why regulation is needed. And then Angelika will move on to presenting the legal practice around the world, and also how this is regulated by international labor standards. So let me...
You're muted for some reason. Yeah.
Okay, great. I was told that the host muted me. Okay. So let me start by explaining a little bit to you how we came about to this research together with Angelika. The thing is that indeed the question of collective dismissals and how to regulate them comes very regularly in academia, and as requests from government, from other international organizations to try to understand how this area should be regulated. Employment protection legislation, EPL, in general is in fact considered to be as one of the most controversial labor market institutions as compared to other institutions. On the one hand, it is destined to protect workers first and foremost, but at the same time, there are very important concerns that these regulations may be too costly for the employer, that this protection happens at the expense of the employer, and hence, this sometimes precludes the employer from hiring workers, from relocating them, from investing, from being more creative, operational, et cetera. And so hence it can be a burden. So very often, whenever there are economic downturns, the recession of 2008, now the recession caused by the COVID pandemic, et cetera, there are voices that come and become very loud that, okay, we need to do some reforms to reanimate labor markets. And reforms, first and foremost, very often concern this idea that it's really the employment protection legislation that has to be relaxed because it is too strict. So we wanted really to address this issue by looking both at the legal and economic issues and trying to understand, first of all, why these regulations exist, what the rationale and the purpose of these regulations, and whether actually the regulations that are in place reach their objectives, the objectives for which they were created in the first place. And this is how we came about this research. Now, looking at the economic dismissals and their regulations from the economic point of view. Well, you might have noticed that economists in general do not like any type of regulation, right? Whether it's financial markets or others, or labor markets or others. And there are good reasons for this. The reasons for this is that economists generally believe that markets are perfect. And you may think about the famous invisible hand of Adam Smith, who was saying that markets are perfect and hence they will clear by themselves. Regulations is not needed. In general, it often works, and this is often true indeed. However, already starting from the 70s, quite a lot of economists, including the Nobel Prize winning economists, started raising concerns and saying that, well, actually, labor markets are an exception to this. They are not really markets. They are more akin to social institutions. They are plagued by imperfections, and hence they are featuring market failures. Market failures is what economists believe are situations in which the individual incentives for rational behavior do not lead to rational outcomes for the society. So, for example, if we think of dismissals here, it may be perfectly rational for an individual firm to dismiss, let's say, 100 workers, but it may be not rational or optimal for a society to have these dismissals taking place at the same time. So this is what we call market failure. And because there are market failures, then we need, this is why we need intervention from the government. This is why the regulations are needed. So from the economic point of view, let me try to explain to you what do we mean specifically by imperfections. Well, there are four types of imperfections that can be noted. The first is what economists call negative externalities. Basically, this means that whatever happens to an individual has consequences beyond an individual. So, for example, if one worker is dismissed, it has not only consequences for these workers, but also for the family, for example, that now is in economic distress. We can also speak about information asymmetries as one of the imperfections. And here, basically, it's the difference that in the information that a worker and the firm possess. The worker may think or may be given the information that dismissal is taking place on economic grounds, while in fact, for example, there are no really such reasons, and it may be a disguised discriminatory dismissal, for example. So we really don't know this asymmetry exists in information. There are also transaction costs. For example, a firm cannot just automatically replace one worker by another, right? There are still, even in the absence of legal procedures, there is still that is time that is needed to terminate work activities of one worker. There's still time needed to hire another worker, to ensure that the matching is done, to do the training, et cetera, et cetera. So the replacement is not automatic. And finally, there is also uncertainty that is involved in labor markets, uncertainties about finding a job for a worker, uncertainties about a match between a worker and the firm, uncertainty on whether a worker actually will contest a dismissal and hence will have to be restored in a firm or an enterprise, et cetera, et cetera. So once again, the fact that there are these different types of imperfections means that we need some sort of regulations to address these imperfections and to provide a better socially desirable optimum. Now, again, as we do this, the caveat is how to regulate so that market failure is corrected, that is, social consideration is incorporated into the individual decision-making of a firm. But the regulation at the same time is not too heavy, that it does not preclude firms from hiring, innovation, investment into new activities, etc. Now, once again, employment protection legislation is one of such regulations that aim at preventing these different types of market failures, right? So if we look at the specific case of individual dismissals, their role is really to protect, to correct a specific market failure, which is asymmetry of information and asymmetry of unequal bargaining power among worker and the employer. And if we look in the case of collective dismissals, in addition to this, The role is correct all those market failures that and imperfections that we named. Moreover, what I have to say is that the collective dismissals are not just the sum of many individual dismissals. They're actually going much beyond individual dismissals in the type of market failures that they are creating. For example, if we speak about negative externalities of a mass dismissal, they not only concern several families of those workers, right? But they actually may concern the whole region, the economic viability of the whole region, of a sector, of an industry and activity, the schools, the medical sector, et cetera, et cetera. So that goes much beyond just the workers, right? The information asymmetry, again, is particularly high when there is a mass dismissal, where we really don't know what the firm has in mind. Does it have in mind a really relocation that is really driven by business needs or by a surge of profits that are particularly excessive? The transaction costs may be particularly high. If, let's say, a firm has to fire several workers and following the individual dismissal procedure, that may be very costly. It may be much more optimal even for a firm, not just for a worker, to fire, let's say, everybody with one procedure, with one decision. Uncertainty over contestation may be particularly high. For example, if there are several workers fired through individual dismissals, then they can really go to the court and say, well, you know, we were several persons, so, you know, it's really not a discriminatory dismissal that is taking place, but the economic one. Let's be concerned about this. And finally, collective dismissals may present really very high costs for a society, depending on their size. Because it means that there will be immediately very many workers, often in similar occupations on the labor market, competing for the same jobs. So there will be a congestion in the labor market. There will be a very high need to provide unemployment benefits. So the risk, the burden for public budgets that is very high. The need to reskill these workers. Often there is also the need to relocate them. So this massive cost that comes on the burden of the taxpayers. And so there is absolutely a need to what economists call internalize the costs. In other words, improve risk sharing and distribute the losses. So again, all of this calls for the need to have specific regulations, which are not just the sum of regulations for individual dismissals, but regulations that really take into account those bigger market failures created by collective dismissals per se. And again, these regulations should not only protect the workers, but they also have to protect employers and the society and restore the socially desirable optimum and hence improve the labor market efficiency. So just to conclude on this and to give the word to Angelika for her to say to what extent the existing regulations actually achieve these goals, when we really speak about the regulations, it's important to understand that the alternative to what we can think of as heavy collective dismissals procedures is not easy procedures. The alternative is not low cost and not strict regulations, but rather it's many individual dismissals, which actually may result in contestation of these dismissals, in social unrest, in the loss of reputation for the company if they are done in an improper way. And these are also those costs that we have to take into account when we speak about the cost of having easy procedures, right? And this is what often is not done when we're comparing different collective dismissals procedures across countries. Finally, and this is my personal opinion, I really do not like speak about the strictness of regulations when we compare regulations across the countries. Because when you think why the regulations were created, they were not created with the objective of being strict or not strict, right? They were created with the objective to correct the market failures. And hence, when we judge them or when we compare them, we really have to compare them on how they're reaching those objectives, rather than whether they're strict or not strict, right? We have to measure them with respect to the objective that were stated when they were created. And again, I hope that this can be also an avenue for further research. Thank you very much.